look who's here.
It's Dr. John Duffy, the author of The Available Parent, and the most knowledgeable person on the planet when it comes to the relationships between parents and children. John, I know that's a lot to live up to, but I voted just one vote and you won. So congratulations.
Thank you, Bill.
There's a story that Wendy and I talked about in the news yesterday, and that's this kid, this four-year-old kid that was at the zoo and then climbed into the gorilla embankment.
Enclosure.
Thank you very much.
Exhibit.
And things did not end well for the gorilla.
True.
Now, we watched the video, and this child doesn't even look a little bit alarmed that he's in with a gorilla and the dangers.
He did scream.
Moment of screaming, yeah.
Reiterated, the kids screamed.
Right.
And I'm thinking he was in shock, but when you look at him, it looks like he's just kind of looking at the gorilla going, okay, what you got for me?
Yeah.
Right. And he might have been in shock from the fall. I mean, you know, we forget the fact that this kid fell like 20 feet before, you know, this all happened.
Yeah. So a couple of questions. Question number one, you kind of just answered, is it possible to be that close to an animal that could untwist your head if it wanted to and not be afraid? And question two is, what are the long-term effects with a kid like this? That's a traumatic day right there. Is that something that child will remember for the rest of his life?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have vivid memories of it, I don't know if you remember 4 years old. I remember seeing Santa Claus. So I know I manufactured that somewhere.
Yeah.
He will hear about this and he will probably move it around a little bit. But there isn't, you know, in his mind, he'll probably shift, you know, what it was like. But this kid, unlike, you know, me and my Santa Claus moment, he's got video footage that he can look back on,
right,
you know, when he is 20 years old,
right,
and see exactly how this went. So, you know, I'm curious to see the impact this has over the long term on this kid. It's a great question.
Yeah. How do parents, when there's so many stories where kids are in the news and then other kids, of course, if you're near a TV or a radio or the internet, you get little bits and pieces of those stories. So if you're a parent to any four-year-old or kid of like age, what do you say to those kids about what just took
place? Don't wander
there?
From
Stay
me.
Stay close to me, right?
There's the lesson. The lesson is don't wander from me. And I suppose the idea of giving them a little comfort is, the reason we're hearing this is it hardly ever happens. This isn't something that happens at zoos all the time. It hardly ever happens. So we don't have to worry about it. But to Wendy's point, don't wander from me and we'll be sure this doesn't happen. It's a great, like, kind of final lesson. Like,
yeah.
Stay close.
And a lot of people are blaming the mom.
Yes.
I don't know how much blame can go on a mom. The kid was videotaped by someone else saying, I'm going to go in that water. I want to go in that water. The mom, as we discussed yesterday, Bill, a kid says that. You go, all right, no, you're not. And you think that's a done deal. You don't think anything's going to go beyond. This kid crawled over a planter and a 3-foot fence, which is not really that high, but he shouldn't be going in the back area and then falling 15 to 20 feet into the enclosure.
Agreed. And there's so much disagreement online. Obviously, you know, so many people are talking about it. So many people want to blame the mom. But, you know, we've all been in situations. I think we've all had that grocery store panic, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You know, where it's like, oh my God, I took my eyes off him for a second and now he's gone, you know? And this just happens to that. This is that situation on steroids. It's a massive, you know, newsworthy situation, but the circumstances probably aren't that wildly different in that she probably took her eyes off him because she figured, well, he's certainly not going to do what he's saying he's going to do.
Right. Who would
it's
going to
be
that?
Right, of course, right?
Right.
You know, so here's the one instance in a million where, in fact, the kid actually, you know, sticks to his word, climbs over into the enclosure, and now we've got this huge problem, which is tragic. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I'm sick that the gorilla had to die. But in the end, it's really, really tough for me to judge the parents. I don't know what was going on right at that moment. They may have four kids at the same time at the zoo, and they've got to keep their eyes on an army, you know, whereas, you know, some of us just watch one or two, and it's easier, you know, so it's tough to judge.
I was thinking about the parent angle, too, not just in that story, but there was a story about the kid that was playing in the river, and then his sister went in to try to save him, and they both drowned.
In Kankakee, that's
awful.
Terrible.
So wretched.
So awful.
Yeah.
So, of course, that's going to be on the parents' heads for the rest of their life. Their mind, you know, what could have happened differently? differently for this to not happen. Do you ever recover from that? You don't, do you?
No. I worked years ago with a man who lost his teenage son who on graduation night went swimming in the lake with a couple of buddies and got pulled out and they drowned. And he – so this was – it was 20 years later when I saw him and he – presented as if it had happened yesterday. I mean, he, honest to God, sure. I mean, just absolutely traumatized, ruined.
Did he have other children?
Yes.
Okay, because that's something, you know, we've talked about this. I don't know if we try to depress each other during commercial breaks a lot, but
yeah,
it's like,
a game we play. We Let's do. See if you can out-depress the other.
But
yeah.
We said, how could you recover? You don't know that you could, but if you have other children, you kind of have to pull it together and survive so the family keeps going.
He absolutely did. He had to survive. He had to work. He had, which is probably a blessing, right, that you have to move on.
Of course.
And, yeah. And what he did, and I always think that it's important in situations like that to create some kind of ritual. He created this foundation and his fundraiser in his son's name, and that's what he hangs his hat on to this day, all these years later, is, you know, he collects, you know, a couple $100,000 a year in his kid's name and creates these scholarships.
That's
and these
nice.
Kids come in. Yeah. So good. I think that kind of ritual, it certainly doesn't bring your child back. It softens the blow a little bit and it makes it feel like it wasn't all for naught.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. John Duffy in the studio with us, clinical psychologist, author of The Available Parent, number one best-selling book. You can reach him at drjohnduffy.com. You have a podcast that is, I said it very Valley
like
Girl
rich
like
people.
Podcast.
That's the way rich people say it.
That's right. I've got to get used to that.
WGN Plus. You can go to WGNplus.com. You're going to be part of our podcasting empire here at WGN. When
so
does
excited.
That happen?
So excited. That should be happening in the next few days here. And the podcast is a whole lot of fun. I'm talking to just kind of regular people who have gone through some kind of struggle or another and are either in the midst of it or are through it. And it is unbelievable how inspiring people's stories are. And these are regular people who've just been going through something. And one thing that struck me is when I started, I said, you know, hey, we don't have to use your real name. I've said that to 15 people. And every single person said, no, use my real name. And at least four or five of them said, tell people to contact me if they're suffering from ADD or depression or anxiety. You know, so
people want to help
people. People want to help. Yeah, people want to help. People want to share their stories because they think it's going to affect other people in a positive way. So it's been kind of this inspiration to me.
Yeah.
Surprising in a way how encouraging and hopeful stories are that start really, really dark. You know? Yeah.
Right.
So there is light at the end of the tunnel on almost all tunnels, right?
Almost all tunnels. The one thing I've learned is what I'm always looking for in my clients and in people that are guests on the podcast is movement. So if somebody's kind of sitting still, oh, I've been playing this role as a victim for years and years, and it's really hard for me to get out of it, that worries me. Whereas if somebody can be darkly depressed, but if they're moving and they're trying different things, you know, I'm going to try to get a job. I'm going to go back to school.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, do Pilates or yoga or something. That movement suggests like, yeah, you're going to find your way out of this.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not a tunnel expert, John, but I think by virtue of it being a tunnel, there has to be an exit at the other end or else it's a cave, right?
I think by definition, that's exactly right.
I'm almost positive. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more with Dr. John Duffy. Give us a call if you have a question or a comment. We're at 312-981-7200. John is extremely good at answering those questions. So more in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Wish you were handier around the house? Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with some help from local home experts. You can do it with Weekend Workbench Sunday mornings at 11 on WGN-TV. 312-981-7200 is the number to call to talk to Dr. John Duffy. Bill, we got a text before Dr. Duffy even walked in the studio.
People have some sort of ESP when it comes to you, John. I don't understand it. But some very good questions have come across, in particular this one.
Please ask how we can help our teen make friends. It's tough.
I think this is really tricky and really painful for teens and for parents, and we get really involved in it. And the first thing I usually assess, by the way, is there some kind of like kind of social deficit? You know, I worked with one kid years ago who said, I know I come across weird. I've got to fix that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But most kids have the social skills they need.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of putting themselves out there and, you know, reaching out to people. But there's a confidence issue, too, and there's some anxiety affiliated with it. We were talking a moment ago about how texting can alleviate some of that anxiety because you can just reach out to a group of people in a group text and say, hey, I'm planning to go to see this movie this weekend. Anybody up for that? So that I usually encourage that, and every once in a while in session, somebody will take me up on that and get a yes. You know, yeah. Even if it's four no's, they get a yes, and
sure.
And that carries them, you know, maybe to the next social thing. But I think as a parent, you also want to get to understand, okay, so why are you not reaching out socially, or why do you feel disconnected socially? Because often there's anxiety under that. I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to be blown off. That hurts too much. I'd rather sit home and watch Netflix.
Yeah.
My kids like to stay home, and Jim and I, of course, wish they'd go out sometime so we could have the house to ourselves sometime. But they have a lot of stress going on in school and a lot of busy, hectic schedules. And so that is their downtime. They want to chill.
And there's that too, right? You know, that downtime can be really self-regulating, and we parents, our anxiety sometimes gets the best of us, and we press, like we want to push our kids out the door.
Go do something.
Exactly. And sometimes a little incubation is not the end of the world. You know, like a couple of weekends at home, not the end of the world. Eventually, your kid wants to connect. No kid doesn't want to connect. Double negative, but I think it's true.
Tell me more about that kid. You said that a kid approached you, and I don't know the age of this child, but he said, I know that I'm perceived as being different.
Yeah.
What do I do to fix that? What sort of advice do you give a kid who realizes that and doesn't know what to do to make things right?
One thing, when you have the privilege of doing what I do, you can learn from other kids. So I worked with a guy recently, a senior in high school, who looks back on his middle school years, recognizes, oh, I was annoying. And so what he did is he paid attention to people's reactions, and he realized, oh, I talk too much. I'm going to talk way less. So he spent his first couple years in high school just scaling back, saying fewer things, and he realized, okay, people are responding to that. People are reaching out to me instead of me just annoying them. So part of it is just calming down enough to have the insight to recognize how you come across. And I think parents can coach kids through this a little bit.
Right.
But that was a lesson to me because I've used it with other kids frequently. Like, pay attention to how people respond to you because it may not be perfect. And there might be an adjustment you want to make. And it can be a minor adjustment that gets you in the fold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good advice. And when the kid says, I'm a little different, how do I fix that? It's okay to be different too, though, isn't it?
It's never been more okay to be different.
You're
you
right.
Know what I mean? Like, you know, I think there is kind of this groundswell of support for kids who are weird, you know, like to the point where a number of kids have showed up in my office with weird is good t-shirts. You know what I mean? Like literally going out of their way to be a little off the beaten path to the point where I think convention is a little devalued a little bit. You know, I think I think there is a lot of social credibility and power in being a little different than other kids. So I think that actually plays really, really well these days, whereas a generation ago, that might have been the subject of bullying.
When we were growing up, I mean, I was talking about we all wore like landlubber bib top skirts the same day. We all had candy slip-on shoes because we wanted to be part of a group and you didn't want to stand out and be different. And I get mad at myself for going, you know, there are several kids I know now that were those different kids and I may not have thought they were cool then, but now I totally do.
Yeah.
Because they've always marched to the beat of their own drum.
Right, right. And I think those kids now have other kids' attention, you know, like those kids who have the confidence, I think, to create and listen to themselves and march to the beat of their own drum. Well put.
It's interesting to me, as I've gotten older, to watch the kids that were kind of the lone wolves or just separate from everybody else to the direction that they've taken. And sometimes I follow them on Facebook or I would run into them at reunions, you know, 10, 15, 20-year reunions.
Right.
And some of them really blossomed in college or afterwards. And some of them are kind of the same version of what they were when they were kids. There's no exact route that they've taken. They've kind of just run the gamut.
Right. And I think that's probably true. Just human nature that,
yeah,
you know, we're all a little bit different. But it kind of suggests, like, you can't make too many assumptions about people. And you're reminding me of a girl I worked with recently who you would think was the most popular 17-year-old kid on earth.
Yeah.
And she's alone all the time. And she's like, you know, well, yeah, boys are kind of nervous to talk to me. And girls don't really like me a whole lot because they think I'm popular with boys. And so, you know, I'm home alone a lot, you know. So
does that bother her?
It bothers her. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the bane of her existence. It makes her anxious. It makes her depressed quite a bit. And yet she puts on this face that makes it look as if she's got it all put together, you know.
So what do you say to her in a case like that? How does that get fixed?
To allow herself to be a little more open and vulnerable with other kids. You know what I mean? And known, you know, part of it is that she's created this image via how she presents herself at school, via Instagram and, you know, and Facebook that looks invulnerable. And I think that's not particularly approachable.
Right.
Whereas if she lets people know, like, boy, you know, I really don't have anything going on this weekend. I would love to get together with you guys.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that little inroad is all it takes. And the people she asks might, and often are, kind of like, oh, we had no idea. We thought you were busy, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's so awkward. It is. I want to go shopping with Kristen Decker, and I don't know how to ask her, but now I just did on the radio. So now it's okay. But to do a one-on-one thing, like, I can say anything on the radio, but
right.
one-on-one, my intimate relationships might be a little lag.
Then always use the airwaves.
Yeah, I guess I will.
It's a great way to ask somebody out.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves, if you're listening, The Available Parent is the name of this book that I really refer to. It's, to me, like the parent's Bible.
Oh, thank you.
You can really get a lot of help. He's a clinical psychologist. He's a life coach. He's a parent himself, a proud husband. Dr. John Duffy. You can reach him at drjohnduffy.com. And we can listen to his podcast. Is it called anything in particular?
It's the steering committee got together and called it the Dr. John Duffy Podcast.
That's a great name.
I like it.
That is a great name, John.
And you can be looking for that in the next week at WGNplus.com. Thank you for coming up.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, John. We'll take a quick break, and then the news with Kim Gordon. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.